everybody. This is Sight to the Blind. Let me start off with this PSA real quick. If anyone has been following me for a while, even on Instagram, you know, as a witness, that I go after no other race but my own people, my own tribe, my own heritage. No one has ever stopped me from going hard at my people. Matter of fact, white Americans have followed me more because I was dissing my own people. Or what they saw was dissing my own people, but I was reproving my own people. No one has ever stopped me, not even from my own people. So all of a sudden now, when I jump color lines, now someone's trying to edify me in the comment section about the construct of race and racism and then how it greenlit African slavery or was used so Europeans could benefit from slavery by using black or white. Before I get to the point, I said this before on Instagram. I said it twice on Instagram, actually. I do not care about color. I do not care about religion. I don't care about your gender. I don't care about your sexuality. I do not care. If the truth runs into any of these entities, any of these topic matters, I'm going to go through it. Now, it's always, trust me, nine times out of 10, it's always somebody white in the comment sections, either it be on TikTok, Instagram, on Spotify, that anytime I jump color lines and mention anything about white folk, which is the truth, then I'm hit with some type of pushback. The truth is the truth. I don't indulge in myself, and I don't indulge myself in the folly of racism or bringing up race-baiting topics. I don't. If anybody's ever listened to this show more than just a couple of episodes, no, I don't really talk about black people versus white people or white people versus black people. I don't do it. I either say Gentile, European, or what have you. But there are instances where I single out white Americans and the truth will come out about them, period. So my answer to this comment, trying to edify me on the construct of race, black versus white, and how I was used to greenlit slavery, let me get this right. White supremacy is a myth. It has never been supreme. Europeans had no power, none whatsoever, to create or be the benefactors of the transatlantic slave trade. They have no power. The reason why we were colonized, the reason why Africa was sold out, was because the Most High allowed it to happen. That's what y'all need to start really realizing about this whole race issues. And stop saying white supremacy. It's never been supreme. Not one day in life has it ever been supreme. The alphabet, the language, the worshiping either of one God or many gods, it all came from Africa. All of it. The Roman and Greek pantheon was stolen from Egypt's pantheon. It's never been supreme. The only way that they could put us in chains for 400 years, it took an act of God. Truly, it took an act of God for the European to crawl from out the Caucasus Mountains down into Africa, put us all in chains, ship us to a land we know not, and to be used as animals, beasts of burden, and to be afflicted for 400 years. The only way that could ever be possible for people who are 80% of professional sports, the only way that could ever be possible is an act of God, not white supremacy. So this whole, oh, you know, the white man used black and white to no, they didn't do none of that. They created the racial differences. They tried to create doctrine on top of doctrine through Charles Darwin that would prove that we all came from apes, when that's not true, because no African has Neanderthal DNA. Not one of us. The only way any of us would have that DNA and share it 3% with the Europeans around today, the only way we'd have that is if it was raped in us. Period. The reason why my bloodline trails off into Scottish, Ireland, and Northern England is through the transatlantic slave trade, raping our ancestors and our pretty much our sisters, our aunts, our grandmothers, raping them to have our bloodline mingled with theirs. And again, only way that was even possible was through an act of God. The only way this world would be in their hands, when it says the world has been given in the hands of the wicked, the only way it's been given to you is through our downfall, is through our punishment. That's it. We're not talking about the Ammonites, the Moabites anymore, are we? Because once we went into bondage or slavery to them and came out of slavery and learned our lesson, they were no longer needed. So there is no more nation of the Ammonites or Moabites. Their bloodline may be still around today, but it's never as a nation. We went into the Assyrian captivity and came out. Once that was done, they were no longer needed. So we're not talking about where the real Assyrian empires are anymore. We went into captivity to Babylon and came out and learned our lesson. They, over time, were no longer needed. Just like Egypt was no longer needed. The Most High, through an act of God, removed these kingdoms because they were no longer needed after being a rod for his inheritance. It is no different today. It won't be no use for Grecians. It won't be no use for Romans. It will be no use for America. This is our last captivity. As you can see, this world is falling apart. They want you to believe it's getting stronger by becoming a one world government. But the only way that's made possible is, again, through an act of God. It's not because of AI technology. It's not because the white man is the smartest man walking on earth. It is not because they have all the military, all the tanks, all the helicopters, all the guns and weapons that they can create. It ain't because of that. It's because an act of God that's allowed them to have this power for them to be destroyed, because their time is up and they are no longer needed. And anybody who wants to be in league with them are also going to be perishing. This whole world was for our sakes, and that's in scripture, that's in Ezra. This whole world was made for our sakes. The nations that we went to be in bondage and slavery, to learn law, statutes, commandments, the first time to the last time, all of these nations were being removed strategically. This is why it says in Genesis 15, 13, and 14 that after your children are afflicted 400 years, I will judge the land that they're in, and they will walk away with great substance. Just like we walked out of Egypt with great substance, We will walk out of America with great substance. Again, our captivity was an act of God. Our redemption and our return to our land will also be an act of God. It has nothing to do with white supremacy. And again, I'm going to say it again. It has never been supreme. Y'all call it white supremacy when it says in scripture, the world has been given into the hands of the wicked. Given. This is the Most High's will in order to make a world of many become a world of few. The lessons have been learned. He's going to put his law, statutes, commandments, his ordinances in our heart so that we will never turn from the right or the left. So the whole world is going to be wiped clean, just as it was wiped clean before the flood when it was majority only black folk. There was no white folk before the flood. Adam, Eve, black. So everything that came before it became out of them were black. It was only Noah who was born with albinism. But he still produced black children. Y'all need to learn your own history. And don't try to come on here edifying me about the constructs of black and white and race. Learn your own biblical history. And learn what ancestors or forefathers you have to repent for. Just as we, Negroes, Israelites, had to repent for our forefathers and the idol worshiping and hedonism that we propagated in the Holy Land. I'm not going to say this again. I know I'm going to have to, maybe in the next couple of years, or maybe the next 50 episodes, but I'm not saying it again. I'll say what I want on this show, and if I say black and white, that's exactly how it's going to be taken. Keep your mouth shut and just swallow it. Or grow up, especially you men. Especially you men. Y'all getting to be too feminine for me. That your emotions are always raveled when somebody of the opposite gender or the opposite color speaks on your gender or speaks on your color. And don't hear the lesson, you just hear the color. But that's the programming that you are under for being in this world too long, because you've seen it play out on social media, your FYP and your timelines way too much. If anybody should be pissed off right now, are Negroes. We have to sit here and watch after all the thing that white Americans have done to us, that a Negro woman yelling back at the cops somehow gets shared on social media, and all of a sudden, 50 to 60 white folk chime in about having black fatigue. This is what we live through. After all we've gone through in this country, none of us has said we had white fatigue. It doesn't even pass our mind. None of us have said it. We just take it as is and move on. It is not me that's putting your race up on a pedestal. It's you that's doing it. You are putting that weak nature, your flesh, upon the pedestal that you feel it can't be touched. That's why I lost like 10,000 followers on Instagram, because when I started talking about that Charlie Kirk situation, because they saw color. They saw a black man reproaching a white man. That's all they saw. Regardless of if I shared scripture, regardless if I made a point, regardless if I shared the truth about it, they saw, how dare ye, a black man, talk about this white man. That's how pathetic Christians are, because they were most likely all Christians. Judo-Christians, Judeo-Christians, or whatever they call them. And obviously they don't read scripture, because the Most High loathes when people exalt man above him, worship man before him, defend man before him. Now, a brother came to me in an email, said he wanted me to talk more about He wanted me to talk about sons and making sure our vices, our mishaps, our fails in relationships before we had our children, how that will shape the future of our sons. So I'm going to say this, and this is even for you single mothers, because you single mothers are more important to making sure that your son grows under the shield and protection and hedge of the Most High Yahuwah. So if I were you, if I was a single mother or a single father, I would be making sure and watching out for any instances or any telltale signs that your son is beginning to be like the other parent. And you better start being honest and truthful about that situation. If the father is not around, or the mother is not around, you be honest with your child and say, well, it was my fault I acted like this when we were together. Do not be in a situation where you're causing your son to hate his father or mother because you have formed his mind into hating the other parent. Do not be bitter against the other parent, because it will for sure show up in your son. Here are some examples. It happened to David. 2 Samuel chapter 12, verses 9 through 14. Wherefore have you despised the commandment of Yahuwah to do evil in his sight? You have killed Uriah, the Hittite, with the sword, and have taken his woman to be your woman, and have slain him with the sword of the children of Ammon. Now therefore the sword shall never depart from your house, because you have despised me and taken the woman of Uriah the Hittite to be your woman. Thus says Yahuwah, behold, I will raise up evil against you out of your own house, and I will take your women before your eyes and give them unto your neighbor, and he shall lie with your women in the sight of this son. For you did it secretly, but I would do this thing before all Yasharel and before the sun. So we know the story of how David came to have Bathsheba as his wife. He set Uriah up by sending him to the front lines of a war, knowing he would be slain. And he tried to be slick and secret about it by not being hands-on with destroying Uriah. But the Most High found out about his scheme and devices, because the Most High knows the hearts and minds and thoughts of men. And this is coming from a man who's supposed to know that he was called or is known by the man after Yah's own heart. So it couldn't be no, let me go to the left or let me go to the right. Let me be sneaky and let me, you know, see if the Most High won't see me. It ain't going to be none of that, especially with that particular type of title on your life. But yet, our ignorance and our flesh comes from Yehuda. Yehuda also came from off the field, drunk. Didn't know it was his daughter-in-law, laid with her, had children with her. Two of those kids end up dying because they didn't want to go into her to bring up seed. So flesh and women and alcohol have been the tribe of Yehuda, specifically the men, issue. I guarantee it. I guarantee you Israelite men of the tribe of Yehuda have issues with your flesh. You have issues with porn. You have issues with masturbation. You have issues with fornicating. You have issues with going out and drinking and fornicating. I'm telling you, we all share this curse. If you read the 12 patriarchs, the scriptures that are in the Pseudepigrapha, which is two volumes, or you could just read the Testament of Yehuda or the Testament of Reuben and Simeon and so forth, particularly Yehuda. If you read these stories, you would know that these curses were passed down, and it'll skip, but depending on when these demons want to try us, they'll skip through the generation looking for the ripest generation to insert what we have always failed in, which is our flesh. So if you, regardless if you are a single mother or a single father of a son, I guarantee you have some of this going through your bloodline. If you are not honest with your child, if you're not honest with your son, if you're not raising your son up in the statutes, ordinances, and Torah of Yahuwah, those demons are going to look at your son, your seed, as prime real estate. I'm telling you this from my own understanding of what was in my bloodline. I have a male forefather who got into some pedophilia. That perversion may have skipped, but that lust, that perversion is still in our bloodline. I lived through it all the way up to mid-35s, maybe even a little bit older. I'm 45, about to be 46 soon, but almost up to my late 30s. It was passed down, and I struggled with it for 20 to 30 years. I started off real early, really early. My attachment to flesh and lust started off fairly early. And it has been a nonstop battle ever since. And up until, you know, obviously when I found Yahuwah and started walking according to his statutes and his ordinances. And then I have a daughter. So it was really, I'm more afraid now than I ever been before, because I don't know when Yah is going to recompense me for all of the lust and fornicating that I did. I know those demons are laying in wait, waiting for my daughter to fall. So that's why I've been allowing her to be a part of ascending smoke offerings, feast days, making her learn, making her read, trying to bring her as close as I can to Yah so she can make better decisions about her flesh than I did. So if you do not put a handle on your son's flesh, and if you do not raise him up in a way that you are honest with him through the eyes of Yah, I guarantee you the Most High is going to allow those sins that you did not fully turn from, those vices that you fully did not turn from, to appear in your son, and that's going to be your lesson. And David said unto Nathan, I have sinned against Yahuwah. And Nathan said unto El David, Yahuwah also has put away your sin. You shall not die. Howbeit, because by this deed you have given great occasion to the enemies of Yahuwah to blaspheme, the child also that is born unto you shall surely die. That's the recompense, a life for a life. But even when Solomon came after the child that was dead, it didn't save Solomon either. Because as wise and smart as Solomon was, what happened? The attachment or the attack of flesh, where he lusted after 700 wives. And through the lusting of these 700 wives, or the pleasing of these 700 wives, was to set up idols from their respective nations round about Yerushalayim, which caused the kingdoms to be ripped into two. But again, it's because the lust of the flesh continually, that curse continuing throughout the bloodlines. That's why his son Rehoboam, whatever his son's name was just as wicked as Solomon because of his lust for power. This is what we create. Our fathers created it. Our grandfathers created it. Our great-grandfathers created it. And the forefathers before that created it. We over here are fighting blind. Most of us fighting blind. Because we don't go and ask the elders what's in our bloodline. Or we are too ashamed to. I can't wait for the day when my son asks me, how do we get this way? Why do we struggle with this? And I'm going to lay it all out for him. I'm going to say, hey, this came from your grandfather, and this came from your great-grandfather. This came from this line, and this is why we are fighting this today. So if you see or feel any of this come into your life, this is why, and this is how you handle it. That is how you prepare your son. Jasher 36, 14 and 15, and Reuben was jealous for his mother, Leah, on account of this, and he was filled with anger, and he rose up in his anger and went and entered the tent Abila, and he thence removed his father's bed. This is when Reuben saw Bila, Yasharel's concubine and wife, bathing one day. It's two conflicting, I wouldn't say conflicting stories, but they're two witnesses of the stories in Jasher and Jubilees. In Jubilees, it says that Reuben secretly loved Bila. And in Jasher, it says that he rose up in anger because he saw that his mother was not being cared for and that Yasharel was, visiting or going into Bila more than his mother, or showing more affection to Bila than his mother. So he got pissed off. And that deed, which was before the Torah, that deed was frowned heavily upon, which they had to create a law in Deuteronomy and Leviticus of not laying with your father's skirt, as it's mentioned in scripture. But that cost the entire descendant of sons that came from Reuben to not have the birthright of the kingly and priestly offices, as it mentioned in Jasher 36:15. At the time, the portion of birthright together with the kingly and priestly offices was removed for the sons of Reuben. So the sons of the firstborn were all going to be the priests and kings of entire Yasharel. That is where it was going to start. It wouldn't have started with Saul or Shaul. It wouldn't have started with him. It would have started with the sons of Reuben. But it was removed, for he had profaned his father's bed, and the birthright was given unto Yosef, the kingly office to Yehuda, and the priesthood unto Levi, because Reuben had defiled his father's bed. One man's indiscretion ruined it for the descendants after that. It wouldn't matter if the sons of Reuben were more righteous than the sons of Yosef or the sons of Yehuda. It wouldn't matter. The Most High is not going to change his mind based on how righteous the sons of Reuben were. He was going to say, no, this is the judgment, and this exactly what's going to happen as a recompense for one man's indiscretion. It's the same way with Esau. It's the same exact thing. Esau, because of his deeds and his wickedness, every branch of his bloodline was not going to be accepted. It didn't matter if there was ever a righteous Edomite. It didn't matter. Most High said, I'm going to remove the descendants of Esau, period. Period. You can see how the bloodline of Esau acts today. Yasharel is not out there during hunting season. There are some brothers, yes, that go out and go deer hunting. But for the most part, that ain't our thing. Where are we? We're just like Jacob. We're just like Yaakov. We're in the tents. We're close by the tents. We're not out in the woods wearing camo, lying in wait for ducks, deer, buck, or anything. We don't do that. We have no the real desire to go sit out in 10 below weather to go hunt a buck and then to kill it and don't even eat the meat and just cut the head off and taxidermy it and put it on our wall, or just don't do nothing with it and just leave it there to die. We don't have no desire to do that. That was Esau's trait. Esau loved to go hunting and be it out in the field. So, again, it ain't about race. It's about what's showing up in bloodlines. It ain't about black and white. It's about what's showing up in bloodlines. So being fathers is extremely, extremely important. So when it says in Exodus, the Most High said that your firstborn sons are mine. Mine. That means, truly, that they are his. And it's up to us, truly up to us, to start having the mindset of Yahuwah in raising our sons to protect them. We can't protect them from everything, but protect them from these curses or these demons trying to re-enter our bloodline through our children. That is our duty. And the only way we're going to accomplish that duty is if we are honest and real with ourselves. If you have an inkling of vanity or inkling of anger, inkling of any vice with smoking weed, drinking liquor, if you are not living in the moderate conditions of vices, I'm trying to tell you they're going to be revisited with your children. And you'll never know if it's a hit or miss. You'll never know if the Most High is going to choose to test your bloodline through these vices. You just never know. Like I said before, if you go to the kings of Yehuda, there were some that were amazingly righteous, amazingly zealous for the Most High Yahuwah. And there were some who were just wicked, rotten to the core. It's a hit or miss, truly. It's all about parenting. It's all about how you raise your son up. If you spoil him, you'll get what the product of being spoiled is. Haughty-minded, arrogant, prideful, egotistical. If you don't raise him with the right balance, if you don't give him enough love, if you don't give him enough compassion, then he'll be hard all his life. And he'll rule his household hard. He'll rule it with an iron fist. And he could eventually get into a lot of domestic violence situations. Because not only will he not be able to learn how to pick a woman, that he will try to rule every other woman that he comes in contact with an iron fist. This is something I had to clean up. I had to clean up my anger issues because that's how I was raised. I wasn't raised with my mom balancing me out with the compassion and love of how I should be in dates because my parents didn't want me to date. For some reason, they thought their child was just going to grow up and somehow just get it with relationships and not go through the tests and trials of being able to be in a relationship in his younger years. My parents frowned on me being around women because they saw every woman as a hoe. Your mothers do that. Your mother think every woman that they come in contact, that you come in contact with, is a hoe trying to take advantage of you and trying to use you to get money. That is about as far as the learning of women came from my mom. That was how I got. My father didn't really talk about women to me. It was just sports, 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 football, football, ball, football, football, football. That's all it was. It wasn't like, hey, when you take this young lady out now, this is what you do. You open up a car door. It was none of that. Our conversations were about football. And moreover, it was more about being aggressive. So my whole thing was about being overly aggressive to please my father. That's what it was about. So growing up, I had an imbalance. My father says it's a chemical imbalance, but I had an imbalance where I used hyper-aggression to be my defense mechanism. Because I knew if I was hyper-aggressive, people don't mess with you. And if I showed my vulnerable side, that is if I let people in, I would get my entire world torn up. Because again, I wasn't raised of learning how to handle rejection, people saying no. So I tried to keep myself away from people saying no to me. So I would never approach a woman unless we literally locked eyes for more than 20 minutes. I needed evidence that they say, okay, I can go talk to you. If you didn't look at me for a while, I wouldn't approach. I didn't like rejection, even though my parents have never rejected me, which is really odd. And this is something I've learned about myself throughout the years. My parents had never told me no. Even when my father didn't want me to do something or whatever, they never told me no. They wanted me just to find out if it's something I would be safe doing or not. So I grew up with this weird abandonment issue or rejection issue. So I would never put myself out there. The only way I would put myself out there if I was aggressive. And that was only from when the field started to blend into my everyday life. So growing up over time, and this is for you women, you single mothers or you fathers who are trying to raise sons in sports. I'm just trying to tell you, if you overly do it, if you only make his life about sports and trying to learn manhood through sports, what will end up happening most likely is when his sports world starts to flourish and he starts to be successful on the field or on the court or whatever sport he's in, his emotions and how he kept that success on the field and on the court, it will eventually start to blend in his everyday life. So what I'm saying is, if he played particularly football and he's aggressive and he's giving you that rah-rah, he got that dog in him, I'm telling you, over time, it becomes a part of his personality. He won't be able to shut it off. He can't turn it off. When he leaves that field, if he starts drinking or if he's with women and they say something slick to him, his initial reaction is to react as if he was on a court or on a football field. He could not be able to turn it off. It'll start to blend. I'm just telling you because that's exactly what happened to me. Without a proper balance of love, compassion, nourishing that love and compassion and giving him understanding and giving him honesty, their personality will be attached to whatever they feel makes you happy. If your son grows up to idolize the father, his mode would be, what will I need to do to make my father happy because I love my father? Same thing I went through. What do I need to do to make my father happy or him paid attention to me? And my father being a football coach, a successful football coach, and dealing with many different sons from different mothers, where do I fit in? Where do I prove that I'm his son, that I had to live up to his shadow? I can't even tell you how many times I've been thrown out of practices for fighting. I can't tell you how many times that I, you know, crackbacks, that was my thing. If I catch you looking away and your head wasn't on a swivel, I'll crackback you for no reason. That's why I was on the field. It was legalized chaos. I did good in organized chaos. If I could catch you sleeping or catch you with your head down or catch you looking somewhere else when you're not around the play, I would just peel into you because I knew my father was watching. I knew my father would be watching. I know it's on tape so I could show my father. So that mentality blended in my life at 4 o'clock in the morning when I'm drunk and somebody say something slick to me. And usually at the end of those nights, around 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm not around men, I'm around women. So when people think, oh, you know, he hates women because he's always fighting with them. No, no, no. I fight in practice. I fight in broad daylight in practice with other men. More than my instances or more than my situations with women, I was always fighting in practice in high school, in college, and in professional level. I was always fighting. But eventually, when you add alcohol, when you add vice, when you add lust, when you add flesh, it becomes a ticking time bomb. So now, going through all of this as a single man and understanding this as a married man and going to be a father of a son, this is the progression and giving everything over to Yah and doing these law, statutes, commandments, repenting from your heart, seeking him after you found him 10 times more. This is why I harp on a lot of doing the ascending small offerings, drink offerings, free will offerings. I'm doing whatever it takes in the ancient days that made the Israelites great. I'm doing all of that. So hopefully the Most High can have mercy and grace upon my son so he won't go through the things I went through. I've already given up with the argument, should I have my son play football or not? I'm not going to allow him to play it, especially when I'm looking at what's going on in today's football lives of young men. I'm watching it slowly but surely go into the cult of Baal. I would be an idiot. I would be stupid if I allowed my son to reach the level of professional level sports and not heed the warnings that I've been watching and posting about this entire time. I would look like a hypocrite, a dumbass, really. Like Marshawn Nealon. I don't know if I talked about him or not. The Dallas Cowboy that recently committed suicide Thursday after scoring his first NFL touchdown as a defensive player, which is extremely rare for a defensive player to score, especially defensive linemen, to score a touchdown. Even more rare to do it on a punt block. Punt blocks don't happen as much as people think they do. They barely even happen in the collegiate level. But for it to happen in the professional level is literally once in a blue moon. And for a defensive player to run into the end zone and cover up the ball for a touchdown, it's extremely rare. But for that gentleman, the Dallas Cowboy Stadium, or the city of Dallas in general, lays on the 33rd parallel, which is how the America is divided between north and south. The south line that runs in the south, and the latitude or longitude, I don't know, the one that runs across, it's the 33rd parallel. Okay? He commits suicide after whatever narrative that they gave you, that either he was arguing with his girl or he was fleeing from cops. Didn't make no sense what they said. But he committed suicide, they say, on November 6th, 11/6/2025. If you add it up a certain way, which is 11/6 and the 25, whatever, wherever you add it up, it equals 33. Every pagan cult goes by summer solstices and winter solstices and spring equinox. So all I did was do the math with his death to the spring equinox. Winter solstice. Sorry. The winter solstice is 12/21. 12 plus 21, that's 33. If I use the end date, which is the end of the winter solstice, it is the same exact date that he died, which is 1 week, is what, 1 month and 6 days. 1 month, 6 days away from the winter solstice. 11 weeks and 6 days away from the winter solstice. So that's 11/6, the date that he died. The winter solstice starts at 10:03. That's 13. Move the 0, 1, and 3, 13. His number is 94. 9 plus 4 is 13. So I would be retarded if I allow my son to go into the professional football league and not know that those demons would be lying in wait for him if he finds success and not able to handle his flesh, alcoholism, because that's in my bloodline. So I don't want these things to happen to my son. So I'm not going to allow him to play football, regardless of how much my flesh and my desire and my heart for him to see a little me, in him. I let him go as far as flag football, to tell you the truth. And of course, these little 12 and under, 14 and under, and 16 and under leagues that they have now, especially in Florida with these coaches, I would not allow my son to be coached by any of these coaches. So that's my thing with having sons and being in sports, because you never know. Say your son is really good at something, and of course, if he could provide rest as far as financial issues with your family, I don't know. That's a different story. That's a different story. But you would have to edify him on what the sports world is so he could prepare for it. Say if a Freemason came to him or somebody offering him a deal, that is something that you and him have to talk out. But you would have to prepare him from the ground up for what's coming to him. So he can't be in a situation like, oh, I never known about this. Oh, this seems like the proper way. And it's the same thing if your kid is smart and he's getting scholarships to go to school and they want him to join a fraternity, or if you have a daughter, they want her to join a sorority. That's when you interject, say, no, this is what these fraternities stands for. This is what they actually mean. This is the veil behind these oaths that they want you to take. I'm telling you, you might as well be honest and truthful with you, regardless of how young he is. If he's at an age where he's understanding and knowing and asking questions, do not hit him with, oh, you know, ask your mother, or, you know, or give him some Mickey Mouse response. Start bringing up his Ruach and start strengthening his Ruach in order for him to make great decisions when he's not around you. That's what I'm doing with my daughter. I got to build her up, regardless if I'm harsh on her sometimes, but I'm trying to prepare her for the harshness of this world. That people are not going to look at her in her gentle nature and feel pity for her. They're going to look at her as something to eat, like, or something to pervert, something to manipulate because she's gentle. I got to prepare her for her not to be manipulated, especially by a boy or somebody that seems pleasing to her eyes. I got to get her to see through that. I got to get her to see through flesh. That's going to be a mission for me. But the mission don't need to be as great as I'm making it sound if I continue to love her, showing her compassion, showing her this is how a man treats you. This is how a man is supposed to comfort you. So it's the same way with sons. Whether you be a single mother of a son or a single father of a son. If the other parent has some issues, you better go through that bloodline so to make sure those issues don't show up in your son. You're doing a double duty, especially if you're raising your son in two different households. That's going to come with a lot of fasting and a lot of prayer. You are trying to follow the law, statutes, commandments in your household, and he's going to a household that's not following anything, but pagan idolatry, wickedness, unrighteousness. So then you truly have to fight two wars and two fronts. One, you're fighting it in your house, and the other, you're fighting blind because you don't know what they're actually doing in that house. You don't know what he's exposed to. But you don't do it ruling him with the iron fist and making him go back to his mother for that nourishment and compassion. You got to play almost both roles. You got to give him the love and compassion, but also give him that rod. You also have to give him that rod. You have to have him cleave to you for him to feel like, oh, if I leave this house, I don't know what is going to happen when I go into the other house. I'm not prepared. You have to prepare him to be able to live in two spaces. Just like I had to prepare my daughter to live in two spaces as well. I let her know that it don't matter where she go, I have authority over her life. It don't matter if she's in her mother's household, or if she's in college, or if she's at a friend's house, my authority travels through every household. That's how I've been raising her. I've always told her this. When, for one example, when she knows that we don't celebrate Christmas, we don't do any of those pagan holidays, and she was with her mother at the time, and she went to school when they had pajama day around Christmas time. And she needed to pick up something from me at the gym or at the athletic club that she practiced tennis at. And then she showed up that day with that with pajama day outfit on, which was like a Grinch outfit. And I looked at her and said, why'd you wear that? She goes, oh, it was pajama day. I said, do we follow Christmas? Do we follow all this? She goes, no. And she hung her head. And I said, Jalen, you need to understand that whatever you do or whatever you try to hide, it will be made known to me because Yahuwah wants me to say something to you about it. It's nothing that you will be able to hide from me. This is how I alarm her so she can walk a straight path, that no matter what you try to hide or what you don't tell me, I will eventually find out because Yahuwah will tell me. I did the same thing with her about her report card. I said, why do you think all of a sudden out of the blue, I wanted to know what your grades were in? Why do you think I just wanted to know this out of the blue? Because y'all wanted me to know that you weren't doing or you weren't handling your responsibilities with your homework. I said, I said, you might as well don't even try to lie to me. I don't try to hide because I will find out. And it wouldn't be me needing to search. I will eventually find out because y'all will alert me to what's going on in your life. That is the same type of conversations y'all need to start having with your sons and with your daughters anyway. Kids think that this is they're the only ones that knew how to lie, that they perfected lying and they don't know where they got it from. I wish my parents would have told me that. I wish my parents said, hey, I used to do this, so this is why you're doing it. I had never gotten that. My parents act like they were never 15 years old. They were never 10 years old. Or they were never in their 18. They were never in their 20s. My parents never talked to me as if they were ever young adults before. They talked to me as they were adults all their life. And the issue with that is I ended up doing exactly what they've done in their younger years. They must have done it because I don't just get it from anywhere. It don't just poof, oh, this is what I'm going to do now. It comes from somewhere. My parents tried to hide those behaviors or hide those curses, your generational curses from me. It wasn't even until I reached 40 till I found out that my grandfather on my mother's side had a drinking problem. I'm talking about a drinking problem so bad that he was smoking a cigarette, passed out drunk from drinking, and burned himself up in his own house. And my mother didn't even tell me this. I had to ask my father, and this was recently, like a couple months ago. I asked my father, I said, was my mother's father like a heavy drinker? He said, yeah, he always liked to drink. He was always drinking. So I became a champion of drinking. I'm talking about I could drink brown liquor, white liquor, and champagne the same night and not get sick. Now, I'd be hungover, but I wouldn't throw up. I've never thrown up over alcohol. Everybody got drunk and want to do the show where they can prove everybody can drink better than everybody else. Like drinking it straight out the bottle. I was that guy. I was a guy, if I get loose enough, I'll drink Patron out of the bottle. And then be up all night, ready to go again. My days in Vegas were hell. I lived in Vegas for a hot summer. All I did was drink. And this was I was in the league. All I did was drink. After games, drink. Days off, drink. I took social drinking beyond social drinking. Within, I was drinking to not remember. Then I end up remembering when I was drinking. I drink so much that I would drink to forget and end up remembering what I was supposed to forget. That's how much I was drinking. But again, it came from my mother's father. When I had dreams and visions, it kept bringing me back to my mother's household. Like I would have random visions and dreams and I would end up at my grandmother's house, which was the house that my mother grew up in. And I never understood it. I never appeared at my father's mother's house. Never, not even my grandfather's house. I've never appeared there. Most visions that I've had, I end up at my mother's house and there's nobody inside and it's always at nighttime. So it was a connection through my mother, through that bloodline. Whatever happened in that house happened to me. I found out that my grandfather abused my grandmother from my mother's side. So where do you think that came from? It all funneled into me. I was the person that was going to get all those curses. I got it from my father's side of lust and flesh. And I got my mother's side from drinking and anger. All of that fell on me. And because we were in these curses, I was out here fighting blind, basically swinging in the dark. I was like Cuba Gooding Jr. in Boys to Men. I'm not Boys to Men, but in Boys in the Hood. Just swinging, hitting nothing. Not knowing why I was acting like this, not knowing why I can't stop drinking, not knowing why I can't stop jumping from bed to bed. And my father's not saying anything to me about it. Crazy. And then my father being a part of Iota Theta something, the Greek fraternity. So my closeness to Freemasonry was also on me. I'm telling you, do not handicap your sons and whatever emotional downturns or any canon events that ever happened in your life, do not withhold your son from learning. Even if it's embarrassing, do not withhold him from learning. I can't wait till my son gets of age. We are going to have walks on top of walks. We're going to have car rides on top of car rides. He's going to know me from the back of my hand to the bottom of my feet. He's going to know everything about me. Everything. We're not going to hold any secrets. This is how you prepare your children. Now, I want to close out on this. I wanted to make this the meat of my episode, but I got carried away with the whole thing about sons. In these last days, the Most High wants us to be set apart, truly set apart. And all you have to do is read about the Exodus and what the Most High actually did for the nation of Yisrael to prove them and to show them to be separate from Egyptians. Even when there were certain Israelites that were living and acting as Egyptians, they were destroyed because they didn't want to adhere to what Moses was saying or to what Yahuwah wanted to be set apart. Exodus 11, verse 3 to 10. And Yahuwah gave the people favor in the sight of the Mizraim. Moreover, the man Moshe was very great in the land of Mizraim, in the sight of Pharaoh's servants, and in the sight of the people. Again, Yahuwah gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. So again, it ain't white supremacy that all of a sudden dwindled down to where white folks are more accepting to us in their spaces. Once those curses were over, the spirits or the ruach of favor started to appear upon the nation of the United States. Ain't no power from what one man can do and can't do. If the first Exodus is going to be like the last Exodus, I guarantee you the Most High is working favor upon the inhabitants of America so we could benefit and move or transition into his law, statutes, commandments beautifully. That we don't have to worry about being lynched, hung anymore, despite what Jewish media tries to impose upon us. It ain't what it used to be in the 1960s and the 50s anymore. And it has nothing to do with all of a sudden white folks caring about Negroes. No, it's the Most High removing these curses off our flesh, getting ready to put them on the others who do not follow his law, statutes, commandments, and allowing us to come back to him and not have to fear for our life because the lessons have been learned. And Moshe said, thus says Yahuwah, about midnight will I go out into the midst of Mizraim, and all the firstborn in the land of Mizraim shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sits upon his throne, and even unto the firstborn of the maidservant that is behind the mill, and all the firstborn of beasts. And there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Mizraim, such as there was none like it, nor shall be like it any more. And people bring this up that try to divide the Bible and to make it about nothing. They say, well, why did God just didn't kill Pharaoh? Why did he kill all the Egyptians firstborn that had nothing to do with the slavery of the Israelites? But they didn't read the book of Jasher or the book of Jubilees, which stated that the Egyptian women would take their children uninvited to where the Israelites were in Goshen, and it would go into their houses. And if the Egyptian baby cried out and the Israelite baby that they tried to hide would cry out, they would go and tell the guards and remove the baby from the Israelite woman's house and kill it. After they already had the edict that any of the sons of the Israelites who they thought and feared would be Moshe, kill them and throw them in the river. When the Israelites were lacking in brick making, They told him, if you lack bricks and building these buildings, we're going to put your newborn children, your sons, into these buildings as mortar. That's exactly what they did. If you look at Egypt and you look at those buildings, just imagine that your ancestors, your forefathers, or your kinsmen, as infant children, were stuck in these buildings and bricks were put on top of them while they were still alive, crying. It got so bad that the Israelite women had to go into the field to hide their children and give birth in the field and leave them there. The Most High took pity on these children and allowed them to be suckled by a rock. And the Most High was able to put a rock in their hands and let honey come out of the rock so that eventually the women would go back and get their children. Not before the Egyptian plowmen, those who were in the field, saw the Egyptian children tried to run the children over with their oxen. So you trying to tell me, oh, they didn't deserve it. Why didn't you just kill Pharaoh? Pharaoh, when the plagues broke out upon his flesh, he thought, because he knew that the curses were coming and the plagues were coming upon his house because of the children of Yasharel, he felt that their holy blood would be able to be a cure because none of the plagues or skin infections ever hit Yasharel. So he took a baby a day, 365 days or 366 days or whatever the Egyptian calendar was at that time. He took a baby a day, killed it, took their blood and put it on his infections and thought that that was going to heal him. He did this for an entire year. The Mosai had so much love for us. He said, per each child that was killed by an Egyptian, I'm going to take out 1,000 strong men. For each one of you that ever died by the hands of an Egyptian, I'm going to bring a recompense and kill 1,000 men for you. Now, let's look at America. Let's look at America real quick. If you think of George Steinem, which is the little 12 to 14 year old Negro child that was the first Negro child electrocuted, I think in the state of Georgia, state of Atlanta, or state of Georgia, or wherever, he was the first youngest Negro child to be electrocuted because they said he winked or he did something to a white girl. And then years later, decades later, he was exonerated. Again, I have every right to be white fatigued out. But I understand that they didn't have this power if it wasn't for the Most High put it in scripture saying that I'm going to send your descendants to a land they know not for 400 years to be afflicted. And all you got to do is read all Deuteronomy and said that the nation that we will be serving, which is a foolish nation, even Paul mentions it, I will anger them with a foolish nation, a people who are not a nation, that will not show care for the old or to the young. I understand those verses. So I can't be mad or upset at white folk. I can't say it was white supremacy or racism. I could say it's prophecy fulfilling itself. But nonetheless, if you look at Emmett Till, if you look at the lynchings and the burnings and the postcards they made of lynching and burnings, if you look at using us as alligator bait, those children that they set in swamps, for one child, 1,000 white Americans must pay the price. Now, if you look at all of the slave massacres that have happened in this country from the time we got off the boat here all the way up to 1800 or 1900 or even past that, 1960s, that is a lot of death. Somebody's got to pay for all that death. You take the same mathematical equation of one Israelite child equals 1,000 white Americans or 1,000 Americans. It's going to happen. Why do you think these CEOs of BlackRock and Vanguard and Bill Gates talking about we need to depopulate. They warming you up for what the Most High is going to eventually do anyway. They think they have the power to depopulate. They don't. They've been talking about it for the last 10, 15 years and haven't done anything except muddle up some vaccines to prove the point or to give out cancer. But that's the slow game. Imagine a mass depopulation through one swoop of the sickle or the scythe. The Most High can get it faster than man can get it. So that's why I just laugh. I truly do. Because people have no understanding of what they say or what they comment without the biblical understanding of why things are the way they are. He says, but against any of the children of Yashareel shall not a dog move his tongue against man or beast, that ye may know how that Yahuwah puts a difference between the Egyptian and Yashareel. But against any of the children of Yashareel shall not a dog move his tongue against man or beast, that ye may know that how Yahuwah puts a difference between Mitzrayim and Yashareel. So when these plagues again come to revisit second Egypt, which is America, we won't be hit with the same plagues as our enemies are going to be hit with. This is why I urge Gentiles to get away from Christianity, because the Ku Klux Klan came under the banner of Christianity. George Washington, who was a Freemason, came under the banner of Protestantism, which is a denomination of Christianity. All the wickedness and evil that has been founded since an institutional level of the beginning of America was under the banner of Christianity. The Knights Templar, which is the first branch of Freemasonry, was under the banner of Christianity until they found out that through the Crusades, they tried to solidify them being for Christianity. Meanwhile, were worshiping the Baphomet and was doing homosexual rituals and defecating on the cross. So the most unrighteous and the most wickedness have been done under the banner of Christianity. If you look up the papal bull of 1455 and Dumb Dye verses of 1432, you would find out that they tried to use Christianity to rape, to cause desolation in African lands, and to what they thought greenlit slavery. But it was just the Most High making it a curse, saying that we would end up serving gods that our forefathers knew not. So that's why most of you Negroes still today worship Jesus Christ. It ain't the Jesus Christ of the Bible, it's the Roman Greek invention of the sun god Jesus Christ, which was taken from Serapis, who was a Greco-Egyptian deity, who were his worshipers were first called Christians. All these your servants shall come down unto me and bow down themselves unto me, saying, get you out and all the people that follow you. And after that, I will go out. And he went out from Pharaoh in a great anger. And Yahuwah said unto Moshe, Pharaoh shall not hearken unto you, that my wonders may me multiply in the land of Mitzrayim. And Moshe and Aaron did all these wonders before Pharaoh. And Yahuwah hardened Pharaoh's heart so that he would not let the children of Yashareel go out of his hand. So even when Pharaoh wanted them to leave, the Most High hardened Pharaoh's heart. Like, nah, it's still some recompense needing to happen on this land that I'm not through yet. The Most High could have got it done through 10 plagues and let the people go. But no, he said, no, I'm not done yet. Just imagine what he's going to do to America. Just imagine. Because it was 210 years in Egyptian bondage, but it was 400 years in American bondage mentioned in Genesis 15:13. So just imagine double what this nation is going to get that Egyptians got. I'm going to read 8 again. And all these, your servants, shall come down unto me and bow down themselves unto me, saying, get you out, and all the people that follow you. So Mosai is saying that Egyptians will eventually bow to Moshe. And then this is something I want you Israelites to understand also, that'll help you remove yourself from the inhabitants of this land or whatever land that you are currently in. Romans 14, 11, for it is written, as I live, says Yahuwah, every knee shall bow to me and every tongue shall confess to Elohim. So everyone, the Gentile, the stranger, the heathen, shall bow before Yahuwah. Philippians 2, 10 and 11, that at the name of Yahusha, every knee should bow of things in heaven and things in earth and things under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Yahuwah is Yahusha HaMashiach to the glory of Elohim the Father. So the Gentile, the stranger, the heathen, they should come to Yahusha and bow. Revelation 3, 9, behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Yehudim and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before your feet and to know that I have loved you. So now we have Yahuwah being bowed to, Yahusha being bowed to, the remnant being bowed to. And now Yeshayahu 60, 14 and 15, the sons also of them that afflicted you shall come bending unto you, and all they that despise you shall bow themselves down at the soles of your feet, and they shall call you the city of Yahuwah, the Zion of the Holy One of Yahshareel, where you have been forsaken and hated so that no man went through you. I will make you an eternal excellency, a joy of many generations. So now we have the Father being bowed down to, the Son being bowed down to, we, the remnant, being bowed down to, and even the Holy Land of Yahshareel, Yerushalayim, being bowed down to. This is why the Most High wants us separate, because he has chosen us as a royal priesthood, as a royal bloodline. And just like how vices and generational curses are passed down, so are generational blessings. And this is a blessing that you need to start preparing for. So in the words of Bats from Goodfellas, start telling your enemies.
Now go home and get your shine box.